Welcome to this fourth podcast in a series about investing in emerging markets into the new decade. It is fair to say that the emerging market universe of today looks very different from that of the 1990s. And indeed, the various economies that make up emerging markets have come a long way. Their rapid development has been nothing short of astounding. In previous episodes of this series, we discussed outlook and trends, growing wealth, and digitalization in emerging markets. Today, we'll take a closer look at China and, more specifically, at healthcare. China has evolved from the world's factory into an innovative, tech-driven economy. What is the impact of technology on healthcare? And how could this be interesting for you as an investor? That is something I'll discuss with Richard Carlisle, Equity Investment Director at Capital Group. Richard, welcome back.
Thanks, Margie. Nice to be back. Thank you.
Richard, we're going to talk about healthcare in emerging markets. What can you tell us about the transformation of the healthcare industry that you see happening in emerging markets, and maybe more specifically in China? And what would you say is the most dominant driver for this transformation?
Well, thanks, Margie. So you're right. I mean, emerging markets, China in particular, healthcare is one of the markets that any investor is going to find interesting. You know, as emerging markets grow and mature, you get both increasing demand for healthcare and, just as importantly, the increasing ability to pay for that healthcare. And in certain countries, China included, aging populations sort of accelerate that growth, as older people often need more healthcare than the younger generations. So in many emerging markets, a spending on healthcare can grow significantly faster than GDP. I mean, it can grow twice the rate of GDP. It's also not particularly cyclical growth. It's structural growth. It's predictable. It's not threatened. The spending is not threatened by technological change. So you have structural, strong growth for many years and decades to come. And that is going to be very attractive to investors to invest in that sort of secure and secular growth.
Right, with the long term in mind. China has the fastest growing healthcare market in the world. What can you tell us about the pace in which this growth is happening?
Well, if you look back a few years, I mean, really until 2014, the pace of growth of Chinese healthcare was surprisingly modest. You had many stories of people waiting 4 or 5 hours to see a doctor and then another 4 or 5 hours to get medicine. They were common stories. Medicine, in turn, came through a multi-layered distribution channel that made medicine difficult to get and often quite expensive. But I think a series of reforms by the Chinese government set about tackling that. So back in 2014, the government started to encourage private capital in a large way to enter the healthcare industry. So that brought capital into the industry. A year later, they started to support private hospitals. A couple of years after that, they moved to allow doctors to work in multiple hospitals. That freed up capacity. And in 2018, they set up the China Medical Security Administration, which brought a lot of the management of healthcare under one auspices, if you like. So, you know, that progressive reform has increased the supply of healthcare quite significantly. Healthcare is always a demand exceeds supply in pretty much most countries around the world. But in China, availability has increased dramatically in the last few years.
Right. So a lot has happened in recent years. If we were to compare the Chinese health industry with the Western health industry today, where would you say that it stands?
Well, I think it might be better than a lot of people expect. I mean, in the way, the fact that it's been grown recently means facilities are quite modern. They've been built recently. Hospitals tend to be large, obviously. But the demand, as I say, is huge. And, increasing wealth often increases the expectations about the quality of healthcare. The aging population increases demands, as we've said. There is a shortage of doctors, as there is in many countries. And one of the challenges for China is to encourage more people to enter that profession. The investment universe in Chinese healthcare is broad. I mean, it's broader than hospitals in a way. I mean, it's a roughly $1.6 trillion market, 40% of which is healthcare services. You've also got the drug manufacturers, so the companies doing research and development into new drugs. You've got the pharmacy sector. You've got private hospitals. So from an investment perspective, it's a surprisingly broad but secure and fast-growing market to invest in.
Right. What do you think, Richard, could be ramifications of China's strategic policy initiatives in biomedicine that we can expect in the coming decade?
Yeah, so biomedicine is a strategic objective of China. You can understand that, I think. I mean, on the one hand, they want China to move up the technology curve, as you mentioned in your introduction. It's no longer the sort of cheap manufacturing source of the world. They will be less reliant on overseas technology, better healthcare for their citizens, obviously. And, you know, they ultimately probably want global healthcare champions. So it's an understandable objective. I guess from an investment perspective, it's quite interesting. And just to sort of do a little detour for a second, I mean, drug industries around the world are often sort of controlled in the prices they can charge. In the UK, we have the National Institute for Health and Care Excellence, called NICE, and they effectively decide what drugs our health service will buy and what they'll pay. And that's the case in many industries. The exception is the US, where there is no real control of drug prices. So if you're a global pharmaceutical company, you know, the US is often a significant part of your profits because you can charge high prices there. If you think about a Chinese drug company, though, they have a huge domestic market. So any new drug launch has got a large and open market. But our sense is the government will be controlling prices. So, you know, if you invest in Chinese drug companies expecting a bonanza as they develop a sort of a blockbuster drug, a drug with more than $1 billion of sales, that may not be there because China looks likely to control the prices. So, you know, many investors in drug companies have had great returns because a small company can develop a promising and innovative blockbuster drug and the shares can go up tenfold, twentyfold. Not sure that's necessarily the case in China because of that control of prices. But it's still a fascinating industry and we watch it with interest.
Right. What is the case is that China is the largest global supplier of active pharmaceutical ingredients as well. So how is China in that sense influencing the rest of the world?
Well, you're right. So there's a well-touted statistic that from the US that 80% of active pharmaceutical ingredients have no US manufacturing source. And China and India are the large-scale manufacturers of those. I'm not actually sure that it's different from many supply chains, actually. I mean, in many supply chains, there's never, you know, massive suppliers of basic materials. And I guess the truth is that it's not economic to manufacture these APIs within the US, just as it's not particularly economic to manufacture clothing, footwear, etc. in the US. They are basic materials. You can diversify the supply base, but that will be more expensive and it will cost more. I remain skeptical. This is more of a personal view that, you know, that these supply chains are going to be massively diversified. There will be some pressure. Maybe post-COVID, you know, the ability to manufacture vaccines is going to need to be an individual country objective. But these are basic materials that, you know, my sense is will remain manufactured in low-cost countries.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned vaccines, and that reminds me of the pandemic, of course. China was the first country to be confronted with it. How has the pandemic changed the Chinese healthcare industry, Richard?
Well, you look back and, you know, history will judge. I mean, from where we stand now, I think we're inclined to be a little bit generous to how China reacted to the COVID outbreak. If you remember back, I think they had only 200 COVID deaths in the country when they built a 1,000-bed hospital in Wuhan in 6 days, even allowing for some exaggeration. That's probably pretty impressive. In the UK, not the UK did it badly. I think we were up to sort of 420, 430. 30 deaths before even the first lockdown, and that's with the benefit of the Chinese experience. So I'm guessing that when people in future look back, that the reaction of China to COVID is impressive. If you look, you know, if you look at infections per 1,000 people, the US, UK, France have been up to 600 or 700 infections per 10,000 people, you know, China has been significantly lower than that. It's different. Population densities are different. The number of tests are different. But, you know, maybe the message is that a sort of centrally controlled country with an obedient population does help in controlling a pandemic. I think you need to look back and be a little bit generous to China in their reaction to COVID.
Right. Slightly easier to manage, I can imagine, than some of the Western countries.
Agreed.
Let's look at the rivalry that is obviously there between the US and China. Already pre-COVID, trade disputes between US and China were the biggest economic headlines, and a frosty relationship, so to say, is continuing. Will this rivalry remain a theme for investors in the next decade, do you think, Richard?
I think the short answer may well be yes. I mean, if you know, the world's two largest economies with very different political systems, different histories, you know, China is presumably, the size of the Chinese economy will presumably overtake the US economy at some point in the next few years. You know, they have very different timescales. You have to think of the US presidential cycle and the changes that brings versus Xi Jinping's leadership, which is enduring in China. So I do think it will remain a feature for the next 10 years. And I don't think we should expect it to end as presidents change or anything. It is something we need to watch for a while longer.
Right. It's here to stay. Should investors, as a consequence, also avoid companies that maybe get caught in a crossfire between those two countries?
I think it's easy to say yes. And you look back, I mean, Huawei got caught up in the crossfire, I guess, in some respects. And I guess that's had implications. I'm not necessarily sure these are easy things to predict and analyze. I mean, it is a more sort of political analysis, which we do at Capital. But it is it's a different sort of level of complexity than financial analysis. So the short answer is yes. Yes, but it's difficult. And predicting which industries will be impacted and which companies within those industries is challenging,
right?
To be honest.
Nevertheless, let's take a look at the investment opportunities that might arise from all of this. If you look at the topics that we have been discussing today in this podcast, which opportunities do you see as a result, Richard?
I think that healthcare services in China is one of the most interesting things. I sort of hinted that the drug development companies may not give you the sort of the spectacular returns that some of the Western drug companies have seen, but services in Chinese healthcare looks a very interesting industry to us. They are naturally more domestic, and I think you can see good and interesting growth and secular growth for decades to come, to be honest. So that would be one that we would focus on a long-term perspective. There are some Chinese healthcare companies that have become sort of suppliers to the developed world. So there are some American drug companies that use Chinese suppliers to do their phase one, phase two, phase three testing. And they have been surprisingly successful recently. And I think we'd expect that trend to continue as well.
Right. Richard, in previous podcasts, we also spoke about ESG considerations when it comes to emerging markets. So maybe as a final question of today's interview, how do ESG considerations factor into your analysis when you look at a market that is as unique as China is?
So at Capital, for us, ESG, we think as being integrated into everything we do. It's integrated into equities, fixed income, equities no matter where in the world. We've gone to lots of effort recently to increase the quality of ESG information we give to our analysts and portfolio managers, implementing a system called Ethos. We've recruited external people into ESG, and we've persuaded some of our fundamental analysts to move to being ESG analysts. So lots of resource applied. On China specifically, we produce a China-specific ESG matrix. I mean, some of the factors that you want to watch out for in China often don't apply in the rest of the world. I mean, related party transactions, for example, often transactions between either an owner or the owner's family and a quoted company, they need to be watched quite carefully. They're much less of an issue in other parts of the world, but in China, that's an example of something we would have a China-specific ESG watch over. So for us, it's integrated. We prefer engagement than exclusion. So we don't particularly run funds that exclude individual companies. We much prefer to engage with them. If that engagement doesn't succeed, then as active managers, we're able to sell them. But for us, it's pretty fully integrated.
Right, fully integrated. Thanks so much, Richard, for talking with me about healthcare in China. And I look forward to the next episode. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks, Margie. Thank you.
You listened to a podcast on investing in emerging markets into the new decade. And I would like to thank today's guest, Richard Carlisle, Equity Investment Director at Capital Group, for his time and his insights. This podcast is offered to you by Capital Group. And if you'd like to learn more about investing in emerging markets, please visit the Capital Group website, capitalgroup.com/NL. For more podcasts, please visit the FondsNews website, fondsnews.nl/podcast.
This podcast has been recorded in October 2021 and the information presented is for illustrative purposes only. While Capital Group uses reasonable efforts to obtain information from third-party sources which it believes to be reliable, Capital Group makes no representation or warranty as to the accuracy, reliability, or completeness of the information. Any opinion, estimate, or forecast is subject to change. This communication is of a general nature and not intended to provide investment advice or to be a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Statements attributed to an individual represent the opinions of that individual and may not necessarily reflect the view of Capital Group or its affiliates. Emerging markets are volatile and may suffer from liquidity problems.